So what if I add this phrase, okay? Americans discard 2.5 million plastic bottles every hour, enough to reach the moon every 3 weeks. I have people and I say that to them, and they go like, yikes. You know, in the first part, I say it's the 3.5 million plastic bottles an hour. That sounds like a lot, but when I say it's enough to reach the moon every 3 weeks, their eyes explode. Like, if you're talking to somebody and you're throwing left brain logic at them, often it goes in one ear and out the other.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is James I. Bond. Here's three facts that I think you should know about James. One, James is one of America's leading behavioral management and business marketing specialists, having worked with a who's who of American businesses. His breakthrough marketing book called Brain Glue, How Selling Becomes Much Easier by Making Your Ideas Sticky, is getting rave reviews by showing how using behavioral triggers has transformed hundreds of ordinary products into blockbusters of success by applying a few simple changes. Two, early in his career, he ran an advertising agency in Montreal, working with Fortune 500 and smaller clients. He's now based in sunny California. And three, the third fact, he's also founder of the Father-Daughter Project to help improve relationships between fathers and daughters worldwide. What a worthy cause. As father of a son and three daughters, he discovered that his own relationship with his middle daughter wasn't as great as he thought. To help figure out how to be a better father, he interviewed more than 100 fathers of daughters, and this became the framework of the Father-Daughter Project. James I. Bond, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. Delighted to be talking with you. And let's talk about brain glue. How do we make ideas sticky?
There are certain triggers in the brain, okay? And if we can use those triggers, then it actually gets our ideas to stick in the brain and resonate with the right side of the brain. You want to resonate with the right side of the brain because that's the emotion side. And all decisions are made. There are two major studies, one at Harvard University and one by Nobel Prize-winning psychologist Daniel Kahneman. They discovered that more than 90% of decision-making, including financial decision-making, requires triggering the emotion side of the brain. Yeah, so what we want to do, we want to make ideas sticky. So I'm old enough to remember, I guess a lot of people do this, Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water, okay? I think the last time I heard that was like 60 years ago. I'm an old guy, okay? And yet on my deathbed, somebody could start by saying, Jack and Jill went, and I'll finish the whole phrase. Why do I remember it? Because it's poetry. You know, Dr. Seuss, Theodore Geisel recognized this, and Dr. Seuss is filled with a rhyme. And so when O.J. Simpson was up for his trial, Johnny Cochran, his lawyer, he could have said, they found the glove, and they said, this is the glove of the guy who killed the woman, okay, his wife, and her boyfriend, I guess. So Johnny Cochran said, if the gloves don't fit, you must acquit. Even the lawyers use poetry. And I remember there was tons of evidence. They had two of the jurors sitting next to each other being interviewed by a journalist. And the journalist asked, well, with all that evidence against OJ, why did you acquit him? Why did you find him, let him go? And one said it while the other one was nodding her head. And she said, well, we knew if the gloves don't fit, you must acquit. The glove didn't fit, so we had to acquit, you know? Poetry. And poetry is really powerful, but that's only one of the tools of brain glue. But we recognize that I came from a logical background, mechanical engineering. And so although I ran a behavioral management firm in Southern California for 13 years, lucky 13, by the way, because I've always been fascinated by the psychology of why people do things. You know, when we understand, if you throw too much logic at a person, it literally turns off the right side of the brain, which is the emotion side of the brain. And so it becomes harder to get them to make a decision. Okay. I remember I was working with a finance company focusing on the behavioral management side. Okay. I don't want to say who this person was, but they were talking to somebody who's a world famous musician. And I know what they were doing because I was teaching them how to market this thing, this service, this tool that they had. And so this one guy was talking to this famous musician and he said, blah, blah, blah. I think you could make as much as 12% on this. And you could see that guy's eyes were glazing over, you know? I mean, I try to remind these guys, have you any idea how many people hated math in school and you're throwing math at them? But he said, yes, I mean, you can make up to 12% on this. It's really good. And the guy's eyes were glazing over. And so I came over because I know how this worked. And I said, well, actually, just so you know, John Lennon, before he died, actually invested in this too. And that's why when he died, so much of his money was retained by the family and, you know, and his estate. And the guy went, oh, John Lennon did it. Yeah, I definitely will do it. You know, and it just, it helps you understand. So I've got this great quote. Okay. I mean, this great statistic. Americans discard 2.5 million plastic bottles every hour. Sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
2.5 million,
2.5
yeah.
5 million bottles. How much is that? When you somebody throws the number at you, what does it mean? So what if I add this phrase, okay? Americans discard 2.5 million plastic bottles every hour, enough to reach the moon every 3 weeks. I have people and I say that to them, and they go like, yikes. You know, in the first part, I say it's the 3.5 million plastic bottles an hour. That sounds like a lot, but when I say it's enough to reach the moon every 3 weeks, their eyes explode like, wow, are you kidding? That's how much we discard. And so we have to understand that if you're talking to somebody and you're throwing left brain logic at them, often it goes in one end or the other. I mean, there has to be emotion. If they like you or trust you, there's emotion there. Okay. If you're talking to the masses and you're just throwing emotion at them, or you know, you're running an advertising campaign or a social media post or whatever else, and you're just throwing logic at them, often it just goes in one end or the other. And that's why when you can introduce brain glue into a phrase, it triggers different parts of the brain and makes the people much more responsive to what you're pitching. Does that make sense?
And James, so tell me if I'm hearing right. I'm hearing possibly three different techniques there that you just described, you demonstrated. You started by talking about the rhyming. Mm-hmm. And so that's one technique to reach the brain. And then you talked about the 3.5 million bottles, and you put it, you gave it a visual context,
right? So
a different right. way of glue. And the other one was, tell me what that was again.
I don't know, but I don't remember. I'm getting old.
There's two of us.
But I will tell you, I have 14 of these things that are really amazing. I mean, think of if anybody remembers Kurt Cobain, and he had a song called "Smells Like Teen Spirit." Ew, what does teen spirit smell like? Is that like a locker room? And yet he did sensory elevation, I call it, as one of them. You know, there used to be ads for Alka-Seltzer, plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is, okay? Because they're using sensory elevation. So just by reading, hearing the words plop, plop, fizz, fizz, you know, it awakens your senses and the right side of your brain, the emotion side of your brain. And so, you know, Kurt Cobain recognized it. I mean, if it smells like teen spirit, is memorable. I talk to people who don't even know the song. I can sing it. I'm not going to sing it right now. I'm not going to torture your audience here, but or you. But I mean, they remember the name of the song, Smells Like Teen Spirit. And so it's sensory elevation is one of them. I had an advertising agency in Montreal. I worked my way up and we won major clients like Kraft, Timex, Avon, Abbott Laboratories, Seagram's, their world headquarters is in Montreal. I had good connections because people were really excited because of the quality of work that I was doing, that we were doing for them. Logical. Okay. And so we had an opportunity to win the anti-drug campaign in America. It was really going to be prestigious and it was going to be fun and we're making a big difference to people and all that stuff. And so we came up with logical reasons why you shouldn't do drugs and they loved it. And then we saw what we lost to. And when I saw what we lost to, I knew they should have won. They're a gazillion times better than my logic. And so there are two issues. The first one was, so it's a guy holding an egg and says, this is your brain. And then he cracks the shell and drops the egg into a sizzling frying pan and says, this is your brain on drugs. Any questions? When I saw that, two things happened. One is I knew they should have won. It was profoundly better than anything that I could have come up with, which is the second problem I had, which was this was emotional selling. And I had no clue how to do emotional selling. I came from a logical background. And so I can tell you logical reasons why, but emotional reasons, things that trigger the emotion parts of the brain, you know, are much more profoundly impactful than, you know, than logic. And so I realized that school doesn't teach us how to do emotional selling. Okay. And libraries didn't have any, had only superficial things on emotional selling. So what I did was I created a passion box. I took a box and I wrote on a 3x5 card, your brain on drugs. So I'd remember that ad. And then I put it in a box. And I said, anytime I come up, I see something that's emotional selling, even if it's a phrase that somebody says, like President John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Oh, that was interesting. I later learned it's called chiasmus, which is a flip. It's like the opposite of rhyme. You know, winners never quit and quitters never win. You know, it's like a flip. If you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. You know, it's a flip. I heard a comedian say, use chiasmus. He said, I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. You know, so even comedians use it. When we go to a doctor's office, my wife would just really get mad at me because I'd be going through one of the magazines and I go, oh, this is a fantastic ad. And she would go, do not tear it out of the magazine. So I have to. I have to put it in my box. This is incredible. And so she would sit as far away from me as possible. So I pretended that she didn't even know me, okay? But I would put these things in my box. After we moved to California, I met John Gray. And John Gray was telling me how he wrote a book called Men, Women, and Relationships. And it was fabulous. But he was frustrated. He sold about 20,000 copies. When you're writing a book, 20,000 copies, it sounds like a lot, but it's not really. Okay. I mean, for all the work you put into a book and writing it and all that stuff, he's at a seminar where he's trying to promote the book and he said something and all the women started laughing hysterically. And the men looked at the women like, what was so funny about what he just said? And so he said, you see, I mean, women find certain things funny and men don't. Men find certain things funny and women don't. And not everything, but some things. And one woman screams out from the audience, it's almost like men are from a different planet. And he laughs and said, I guess men are from Mars. It's like men are from Mars. And everybody laughed, men and women. When he got home, he thought, okay, if men are from Mars, where are women from? Women are from Venus because Venus is the god of love. So, and then he got this crazy idea. What if I change the title of my book? The men are from Mars, women are from Venus. And I'll go through the book and I'll just put like references to men are from Mars, women are from Venus, but it'll be the same book, but I'll refer it to men are from Mars, women are from Venus over and over again. What do you think happened? Almost overnight, he sold 500,000 copies, then 1 million, then 2 million. You know how many books he sold? 50 million books. By the way, at 10 bucks a book, that's, you know, $500 million, $500 million. I mean, you know, that's amazing. He went from 20,000 books to 50 million books just because he changed the title. He changed the title enough that a gazillion people wanted to buy the book. I remember being in a bookstore and I'm looking at books and I go, Men Are From Mars, Men Are From Venus. Oh, that's funny. What's that? I picked it up. That's what you want, right? In a bookstore or, you know, you pick it up. You pick it up, there's a greater chance you're going to buy the book. So when I got home, I was going to put the book inside my passion box. Then I thought, no, this is too important. This is powerful. And so what I did was I put the book on the bed and I dumped my passion box, which had a gazillion things. I've been doing this for 35 years, filling the passion box. So I got a lot of stuff in there. But I dumped it onto my bed and I said, you know, this is the logic guy in me. Let me look for patterns. Are there patterns? Okay. So the first pattern I got was a metaphor. So men are from Mars, women are from Venus. We're not really from Mars. Ladies out there, I don't think we're really from Mars. You know, we might be. I mean, maybe actually, but no. But it's a metaphor, okay, or analogy. So I said, okay, well, what else has a metaphor analogy? So the second one was Shark Tank. If you've watched Shark Tank on TV, it's not a tank full of sharks. I mean, it might feel like it if you're on the show, but it's not a tank full of sharks. But it's a metaphor, okay? I mean, if they called it Investors Club, do you think it would be as successful as Shark Tank? No way. The fact that it's called Shark Tank and it's a metaphor, you know, it triggers different parts of their brain. It makes it sound like, wow, this is fun and we got to watch this, okay? Then I realized, oh, I was watching a History Channel about Rocky Road ice cream. Dreyer's ice cream was started about the Great Depression. They were the first, you know, they had chocolate, vanilla, strawberry ice cream. Those are the three. So he said, why don't we add nuts to chocolate ice cream and marshmallows? What do we call it? Well, it's kind of like it's bumpy. It's like a bumpy road. Why don't we call it Rocky Road? They came up with the term Rocky Road and the sales exploded. They became a monster of success. Okay, so Rocky Road has a few things going for it that are brain glue tools. The first one is it's a metaphor. Okay, it's not really, you don't get rocks in it when you open it up. Hey, want some Rocky Road ice cream? No, I don't want rocks. Thanks. You know, there aren't rocks in it. So it's a metaphor. The second thing is it uses something called alliteration. repeating sound, rocky road, ruh, ruh. And as I started investigating, I realized how many major brands use alliteration. Coca-Cola, PayPal, Best Buy, TikTok, you know, Lululemon. Some girls were telling me, hey, you're missing any girl stuff, you know, Lululemon. But, you know, I mean, think of TikTok. If they called it the Chinese social media, you think it would have as many people on it as TikTok? No way. Okay. And so alliteration works. They also use humor. And humor can be really powerful too. It triggers actually oxytocin in the brain. It actually makes people much more receptive to your ideas or products if you can say a joke. And I'm terrible at joke telling, but I still practice and people laugh even though they realize I'm just trying. I'm really a bad joke teller. So Rocky Road was launched during the Great Depression. Okay, in the 30s or whatever it was, the Great Depression. And so the Great Depression had a nickname. It was called Rocky Road. We're all on a rocky road. So Rocky Road ice cream, one of the things they would say is, you know, we're all on a rocky road. We might as well eat Rocky Road ice cream and made people smile, you know. And then they went, okay, and they started buying it. And so when I realized, wow, these things are tools and I could divide them up into like 14 different categories, it blew my mind because I went like, wow, these are actual categories that you can that stick to the brain like glue, that make it easier to sell stuff. So I had a client in Southern California who was a construction company. I had no experience with construction companies. I do now because I work with them and others since then. But there were three partners, okay? Three partners who after 10 years had 2 million of sales. That's not bad. 2 million sales after 10 years. I mean, it's a construction company, so a lot of it is costs and things like that. But still, in 1 year by applying brain, so it was one of the first companies I started applying brain glue with. I said, hey, I have this thing. Let me try this. In 1 year, I took them from 2 million to 10 million. It took them 10 years to go to 2 million. I took them in 1 year to 10 million. And then 2 years later, they reached 32 million in sales. So how did I do it? So the first thing I did as a marketing consultant, I focus on behavioral management. As a marketing consultant, I got a whiteboard and I said, let's make a list of every different type of client you go after. Okay. So it was a massive board. It took a while, you know, who else, what else, kind of companies, you know, and I went through some of their files. Oh yeah, we work with this type of company and that guy, type of company, et cetera. And then I said, okay, we're going to play a game. And the game is you have to pick one type of company you're going to focus on and only focus on them and refuse working with everybody else. And they said, well, we can't do that, you know, because they would do it for homes and groups of homes in a community and manufacturing facilities. They would say no to nobody. Okay. And I said, I understand that. We're not going to get you to say no yet. I just want you to focus on, if you had to pick one that you were just going to focus on this one, who would you pick? What would you pick? And they said, okay, after a lot of soul searching and brain searching, they came up with a fire restoration for insurance companies. Meaning every time an insurance company's client has a fire, you know, you have to go in and first check, did the frame get damaged? If it does, you have to tear down the whole house. If the frame isn't damaged, then you can build a house around it, but make sure it isn't going to catch fire again because you have, you know, all those types of things. So there's a process you go through. And I said, okay, fire restoration for insurance companies. So every time an insurance company's client has a fire. So let's come up with a really cool name and the way to describe it. And so I came up with this concept. Why don't we call you guys the fire extinguisher for insurance companies? You know, I use the word fire because client is going to think of fire. So fire something. And so we said, fire extinguisher is a good one. So, and we'll call it Fire X. Okay. And so now they would go in and pitch to insurance companies. They would say, just think of us as the fire extinguisher for you guys. Okay. Every time your client has a fire, we're the fire extinguisher. You want to bring in the fire extinguisher. And sales exploded from 2 million to 10 million in sales. And then they went to 32 million. It blew their mind so much that they recognized we don't want to sell to anybody else because there's too much money we can make just from focusing on fire restoration for insurance companies. And because it's fun to say, hey, we're the fire extinguisher. It blew their minds because it was adding that fun, easy to remember phrase made it easy for them to go to, you know, from 2 million to 32 million in sales. It was amazing. And so I started to realize that this is powerful stuff. And I do volunteer work for the U.S. Small Business Administration, where I'm a past workshop chair, but and I do workshops there and seminars. And we would have, you know, sold out, I mean, packed workshops. We didn't get paid for it, but, you know, they paid for a room and stuff with the Small Business Administration paying for it. And would just teach this to people. And it just blew their minds. You know, and people would come back after and just grab me in the hall and or at a grocery store and say, well, my wife and I are at a grocery store and said, we tried this brain glue thing with your husband. And boy, it was so amazing. I wasn't trying to get that. It was a little embarrassing. But it was fun because it applies to so many different types of businesses. In fact, let me give you, so this book used to be called, I'm embarrassed to say, only because I'm a logical person, so I fall back to logic. It was called Sell More with the Right Brain Marketing Strategy. That is a left brain title. Okay. People, when I changed the name, by the way, they were so happy because they could never remember what the title of the book was. So I had Jack Canfield, who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul and the series. And so he sold 500 million books. So you have 100 million Chicken Soup for the Soul and 400 million of the Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul, Chicken Soup for a Cancer Survivor Soul, things like that. So 500 million books. The guy's massively wealthy. He doesn't need me to tell him anything. But he got mad at me. He said, I had a chance to meet with him. He said, you just really pissed me off. I said, sorry, what did I do? He said, I was just going to read a little bit of your book and I couldn't put the thing down. This was amazing. He said, in fact, I'm buying books for everybody in my company. I'm requiring everybody to read the book, which is like, really? Thank you. You know, only on one condition. You have to change the title of the book. You can't call it Sell More with the Right Brain Marketing Strategy. That's stupid. It's a left brain title. You have to call it Brain Glue because the whole book is about brain glue. I said, okay, do I have to? He said, yes, you have to. I read your book. You've got to follow your process. So, you know, so it's Brain Glue is what it's called. But it's just, it makes us recognize, also made me recognize how easy it is to fall back to the way we are. I'm a logical person. I'm looking for logical, solutions. And so I wanted to describe what the book is like. It's, you sell more if you use a right brain approach, okay? Our emotional approach and trigger the right brain, but it's about brain glue. And he said, you're a brain glue guy. So you got to your book has to be called Brain Glue. I'm the Chicken Soup for the Soul guy. In fact, he was telling me we wanted to come up with a really fancy title, and I thought one day I woke up and I said, it's almost like eating chicken soup. Because chicken soup makes you feel better if you're sick. So he was originally going to call it Chicken Soup for the Spirit. He was telling me, and then he said, but it doesn't sound right, spirit. And then SOUP SOUL. It's alliteration. It's a repetition of sound. Chicken Soup for the Soul sounds better than Chicken Soup for the Spirit. And then he came up with Chicken Soup for the Soul. And he says, I think based on reading your book, if I call it Chicken Soup for the Spirit, it probably wouldn't be as successful. And so it's like, wow, I'm getting people who I think are massively successful. He's telling me, I wish I had read your book a lot earlier because I've published like 65 other books and, they're bestsellers, but a lot of them are bestsellers because he's so famous because, his book, and he was on a movie called The Secret and all that stuff. And it helped him become so famous that people would go out of their way to get anything that he published. I mean, they're good books. He's an awesome, awesome writer. But he's realizing I would have changed titles of some of my books having read yours now. It's like, okay, thank you, So, but anyway, that's how powerful Brain Glue is, because it just triggers enough parts of the brain that people actually want to buy what you're selling.
James, so I'm hearing that the thinking of renaming a company, renaming a product or service, renaming a book, even renaming a campaign or a program can have, just by that itself, can drastically change the results. So how does a person know that it's time to change the name?
Well, you could be like me and you sell, or like John Grady, he sold 20,000 copies and he wasn't happy. I mean, we're focusing on your intended message, right, George? And so your intended message is, I remember Zig Ziglar saying this because I started in sales. And I mean, I had built an advertising company and I started in sales. And I was like, I had a brother who was selling for me. So that was great. But once we departed, I love my brother, but not in business. Okay. Family and business doesn't always mix. I had to learn how to sell. And it terrified me. I felt like a car salesman, like, oh, nobody likes salesmen and all that stuff. Now I know, the greatest salesmen in the world are Steve Jobs, Warren Buffett, believe it or not, and all these other people, okay? And selling is honorable. But Zig Ziglar said, you don't have to teach anybody how to sell. I mean, he had a sales program. It was really fantastic. But he said, the bottom line is you have to understand, you don't have to teach anybody how to sell. Selling is a transference of passion. If you're passionate about something, like if you saw a movie, I saw a movie, Hidden Figures, okay, which is really, I love that movie about the three black women who were in NASA and at the beginning of the, the going to the moon and all that stuff. And I love that movie. Nobody has to teach me how to sell that. I know how to sell that. It's like, oh, you have to see this. Oh, wow, it's a great movie, blah, 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 like, okay. I mean, I took Toastmasters. My wife said they taught them how to talk. They just didn't teach them how to shut up. So I get, wives will do that, But I mean, but the point is, I recognize this. When I'm talking to somebody and helping them, like I work with a paint company and they said, yeah, paint is all boring. I said, are you kidding? Can you get passionate about it? And so we started recognizing that their paint was actually used in the movie Titanic. that they actually paint, you know, he painted the ship and all that stuff because it had certain effects on different types of paint that it would actually not get dissolving on salt water, first of all, but it will also have certain textures they had and everything else. In fact, they were paint and coatings. And I said, what's coatings? And that's, you know, all paint is a coating. And so I said, oh, okay, well, you know, that means we can change the coatings and different things. But what do you guys love if you're passionate about it? They said, we're guitar players. So there was Gibson Guitar was just not far from this company. I said, let's see if we can set up a lab for Gibson Guitar in our studio, in our company, and we'll actually put coatings on their guitars so we can actually come up with really cool coatings for their guitars. They won Gibson as a guitar, as a client, but they went from being, oh, this is boring paint, to being like, ah, I put posters of Titanic all around the place. I said, we're the guys that did Titanic. And when you raise the level of passion, suddenly sales went up, you know? And so the first thing you have to do is you have to be passionate, but you also have to understand how to transfer passion. And that's why brain glue is so powerful, because you want to be able to transfer the passion so that people can, you know, feel. I mean, like I go back to the quote that I said, you know, I mean, you want to, Americans discard 2.5 million plastic bottles every hour. I feel bad about that. That's terrible. But what does it mean if I say it's enough to reach the moon every 3 weeks? You know, I mean, now I have an intended message, and my message is, it isn't just words throwing at you. My intended message is, I want you to understand how terrible, you know, plastic is. Now, I love plastic, but I mean, I'm just saying it's really powerful. In fact, so I had this lady, because brain glue doesn't just work for products and services that we're selling, okay? It also works in persuasion. So Malcolm X was a civil rights leader in America, okay? Black civil rights leader. He was fabulous. And so he came up with a phrase, which is chiasmus, which I talked about a little bit in the beginning, which is a flip of rhyme. Instead of rhyme is A-B-A-B, chiasmus is A-B-B-A. It's like, you know, some of the, let me get some of them because I forget them sometimes.
Can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with.
Exactly. There you go. Okay. So he said, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. The rock landed on us. That's much more memorable than saying, you have no idea how hard it's been being black in America. Okay. Okay, that'll go in one or out the other, okay? But if he says, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock, the rock landed on us, it's like, oh, interesting. He said, when you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything, okay? Mae West was really funny because she would do a lot of those things too. Anyway, but let me tell you, so let me give you some Mae West jokes since I set it up first, okay? Mae West was like hilarious. Mae West was at the beginning of the movie business and all that stuff. And she said, it's not the men in your life that matters, it's the life in your men. It's better to be looked over than overlooked. Women like a man with a past, but they prefer a man with a present. I love that one. When women go wrong, men go right. After them, go. Good girls go to heaven. Bad girls go everywhere. She was hilarious. But so then this woman asked me, this mommy asked me, she says, I've got twins, two young twins, and I've got a 14-year-old boy. And so does brain glue work with my twins? I try to get them to bed. I read a story to them at night. And then they want another story and another story. And it drives me crazy. I want them to go to bed. So can you help me? I said, well, okay, let's practice with this. Let's come up with a poem. So when the story is read, it's time for bed. That works. Okay. So let's try that one. So tell them when the story is read, it's time for bed. Okay. And have them repeat it. So she came back and she said, it worked. It was great. You know, I told them when this, okay, I'll read you a story, but when the story is read, it's time for bed. So when the story is read, and they said, okay, mommy, it's time for bed. And so she said, I read the story. And they said, mommy, another one. I said, when the story's read, okay, mommy, it's time for bed. And they went to bed. Okay. She said, it worked. So now you have to help me with my 14-year-old. And I'm like, I'm supposed to be the expert in this, which I am, but I mean, still. So I said, why, what happened with him? And she said, he said, why do we have to follow so many rules in life, mommy? That's a tough question. So I said, okay, so let's start with rhyme. What rhymes with rules? Fools. So why don't we say only fools don't follow rules? Okay, that's a starting point. But let's make it even stronger by putting an analogy in there also. So I came up with an analogy and we tried it on him and it was amazing. So I sat down with her son and her and I said, so you were asking your mom, why do we have to follow so many rules in life, right? And he said, yeah. So I said, well, when you're thirsty, you could drink out of the toilet, but why would you want to? Remember, only fools don't follow rules. And then he goes, oh, that makes sense. When do you ever get a 14-year-old ever saying that makes sense? Never. I escaped before he asked me another question, by the way. But I mean, did it really make sense? Or was I just triggering parts of the brain? And so in politics, they have these two phrases that always got my attention. And the first phrase is, which goes along the same lines, is you can't hug a child with nuclear arm. you know, it's an anti-nuclear arms one. Well, it doesn't really make sense, but people go, yeah, because you're, you know, hug a child. So you're talking about emotion. You're bringing emotion into it, hugging a child with nuclear arms, and you're putting something like, a bomb, atom bomb, you know? And so you can't hug a child with nuclear arms. That's power when you say it that way. Instead of saying, hey, I'm against nuclear arms, you know, that's not the same as you can't hug a child with nuclear arms. And here's another one. Now, I'm not against the gun control. I'm from Canada originally, but, you know, I don't have guns, but I'm not doing this for political reasons. But I was impressed by the power of this because it uses brain glue. And the comedian said, this is chiasmus, okay, flipping. The right to bear arms is almost as crazy as the right to arm bears. I mean, like, what? And some people who are really into it, like, go, yeah, you know? They laugh while they're nodding their head. Does it really make sense? No, it doesn't make sense. And yet, but it triggers a part of the brain. When you activate the emotion side of the brain, then it makes sense. I mean, a lot of people who sell, they always say no, like, trust, okay? We always talk about that in marketing. Well, why are we saying that? Because they don't know you. So passion to trigger the right side of the brain, the emotion side of the brain, you've got to like you and trust you. That's why one of the things I try to teach people, I ran a behavioral management company, and whenever we go into clients, I try to train my people, I didn't try to say a joke or say something engaging in the beginning that will really get people going. And the reason is because when you trigger emotion in the person at the beginning, especially if you say a joke, then they become much more receptive to whatever you're teaching them or training them. We ran a training company, so we wanted people to be receptive because, you know, they come in and they're thinking, I just had an argument with the guy downstairs. We just lost a big client and everything else. How do you train somebody who's into that? Okay, so I would say a joke like in one company I did a turnaround for, I said, so the maintenance man is hiding in the maintenance closet. And every time people come up near the maintenance closet, he opens the door and screams, supplies, you know. And so not the greatest joke, but I think it's funny. I was working with this company and we were going through a turnaround, a martial arts equipment company. You know, they make boxing gloves and all kinds of martial arts equipment and stuff. And it's scary when you're going through a turnaround because the company's in trouble and people are afraid they're going to lose their job and their stress and everything else. And I needed them to be much more creative and, you know, active and interactive with clients and with us coming up with new products and things like that. And so by telling them that joke, to show you the power that joke had, I would like stick my head into somebody's office and say, hey, how's it going? And they would go, supplies. For a year I was working with them, and I would, not every single time, but I would say a third of the time I would, you know, stick my head in their office or, you know, over their desk and say, how's it going? Their answer was supplies, you know? And they would go from, you could see stress of, oh, supplies, you know, I'm the supplies guy. But just because the power of humor, you know, I saw, you know, pictures of famous American presidents. And if you see they're with the head of Russia and they're both laughing hysterically, I saw one with Bill Clinton and Gorbachev, I think, or whoever it was, and they're laughing. And because they're laughing, you figure that, okay, they must be connecting, and therefore we're probably not going to get nuclear bombs fired at us, you know? So, yeah, it's just, I never thought of the power of emotional selling and how profoundly it boosts selling. But I mean, and I'll go back to John Gray. He went from a small number of books to 50 million books. Hey, everybody out there, you know, including you, George, how many, you know, you have 50 million people on your podcast? Not yet. We're on our way, though, you know? And so we want to remember that your intended message, like your message is not just words. It's not just numbers. But it's passion and emotion. And when you can transfer that emotion to the other person or transfer emotion to the other person, they're more likely to buy from you.
And James, people who are interested in the book, of course, they can find it on Amazon. They also can go to the website braingluebook.com, and they can find that link in the description below. James, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could talk to a business leader who is in a competitive market, whether it's they're in accounting, they're in law, they're in plumbing, and if you could give them one, two, or three pieces of advice about how to convey their message, whether it's the name of the company, the name of the business, or slogan, what might be that one, two, or three pieces of advice that you would give them to get them in the right direction?
Sell from passion. Okay. I'll give you a great example. I'll give you two examples. One is a guy who made an electric razor that shaves man's private areas. Okay. Private parts. And so we're thinking, okay. And he didn't want to offend people, but he wanted to make it clear what he was offering. So he went analogy. And analogy is a great one to go and pick the craziest analogy to think of first, and then you can work your way down. Often the craziest analogy could be the best. So what was his analogy? It's just like a lawnmower. So he called the product the lawnmower and generated like over 100 million of sales because he came up with this crazy title, the lawnmower. People went, "That, you see that shaver? That's the lawnmower." So not only do people want to buy the product, but they want to share the name. Hey, guess what I just bought? I bought the lawnmower. What? Yeah, it shaves private parts. It's amazing. People knew what it is and they came up with a crazy idea. So Kerry Smith had a company and he ended up buying a small company to add to his company, and they made it really huge fans for farms, because, you know, on a farm you have cows, you're not going to have air conditioning in the barn, you know, but you could have a big fan and put a big fan up there. And so that's an easy way to do this. And so they made really large fans. It was really good. He eventually figured, hey, I can sell it to industrial companies and construction, you know, and big factories and stuff like that too. And so he came up with this ad that was really funky, and he said, you know, if you're talking to a person, what would you call it? It's not just a big fan, it's a big ass fan. So he came up with big ass fans, and sales took off like crazy. And he was so much so that he changed the company's name to Big Ass Fans. And eventually, after 15 years, he sold it for, get ready for this, $500 million. Okay. But along the way, he was Big Ass Fans, and he was, as he was changing the name to Big Ass Fans, he recognized, I want to sell other products, not just fans. And it distracted him. And because it distracted him, he realized, wait a second, I'm selling big ass fans. That's selling like crazy. Everything else, we're making low profit margins and it's not doing that well. Let's just focus on big ass fans. And by focusing, which is my set, the first one is think of an analogy that's really crazy. And then, you know, about how to describe your product or service. Okay. It's just like, you know, we had a behavioral management firm. And so people didn't understand what we did. So we came up with this analogy and it became easier to sell. We're just like a personal trainer. Personal trainer shows up at your house at 5 a.m. You know, if they show up at my house at 5 a.m., I'd throw them out. But anyway, but they show up at your house really early and they get you to do push-ups and sit-ups and whatever else, okay? Well, maybe you can do 10 push-ups by yourself, but if you have a personal trainer pushing you, you'll do 20 or 30 push-ups. Come on, you can do two more. Yeah, you got it, okay? And we do that with your senior management. We'll take them and tackle stuff outside their comfort zone. Not massively outside their comfort zone, but slightly outside their comfort zone. And if you get all your key people tackling something outside your comfort zone, your company will take off like gangbusters. And so by using the analogy, that was really powerful. So that was the first thing. And then the second is think of an analogy. I mean, Brain Glue has lots of tools, but analogy is a good one to start with, okay? And a crazy one, the crazier the better. Think outside the box. And the second one is focus. You know, if you can identify, like I did with the construction company, you know, identify the different markets you're going after. Can you focus on what would happen if you focus just on one? And you want to experiment, you know, make sure it's worthwhile for you. But I can't tell you how many companies we've worked with. And they think I'm brilliant, but I just have this thing I do. Let's simplify it down and focus on one. Steve Jobs did that. They had so many products and he created a table and said, if it doesn't fit on the table, we're not selling it. This was a small table. And they said, but we have all these products. I don't care. It's got to simplify it. So what happened? He became the most valuable company on the planet, okay? Because he simplified it. So you can simplify your message. It becomes really powerful. And the third one is just, you know, have passion about what you're selling. You know, like I go back to my, you know, my paint company that I was working with, you know? I mean, to them, it was just boring paint. I mean, how excited can you get about paint? And you can get really, really excited. I mean, I found out they had this guy who invented paint for the airplane, for the airline industry, had patents on it. And I never thought of this before. He's explained it to me. He said, you know, an airplane, you have to have a thin coat of paint because paint is heavy. We don't realize that it makes the plane heavier. That's the first thing. The second thing is it's got to retain its color because it's going way up there where there isn't enough, you know, the rays of sun are burning on it. You can't have a plane land and you've got, you know, faded paint on your plane. You're going to think, are we getting in that plane? And the third one is you have big temperature changes it has to go through because it could be really hot up there and it lands in snow. Okay. So it's, you know, it's got to be able to withstand it without cracking because it's going through this massive change of temperature. And I'm like, whoa, that's amazing. I started sharing with the other people. They went, oh yeah, we know that. I said, but that's amazing. And they went, well, actually, yeah. I said, I want you, every one of you, to go home and share it with your spouse or kids and tell them about airplane paint and see if they don't get fascinated. And people would come back and say, like, I can't believe they actually thought it was amazing. You know, it's like, yes, sometimes you're selling a product or service for such a long period of time, you forget how interesting or exciting it is. Those are my three.
Powerful advice, James. My guest today is James I. Bond, reminding you that men are from Mars and women are from Venus.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.